Welcome to the Cup and Saucy Book Club. I'm Jen.
And I'm Zanna.
What's in your cup today, Zanna?
Today I'm drinking a cranberry blood orange tea from the Republic of Tea. It's one of those big bags of tea bags that I got, and I just sort of stuck my hand in, picked one out today. So it's a cranberry
random
blood
sampler.
Orange. Random sampler. I'm having random sampler. What's in your cup today?
Well, it's still morning. My throat's still a bit scratchy. And so I'm having an herbal that I recently discovered called Throat Soother. And it's by Numi Teas, which is local to me. It's kind of reminiscent.
I can get Numi Teas here, too.
Yeah, but the company is based here in California. So
everything's based in California.
Well, and this one's kind of reminiscent of the Singer's tea that I make for myself, that the recipe I'm not giving away to anybody. but this one has a little bit of sage in it, so it's got a bit of a different flavor, and it's nice. I kind of like it.
Okay. Okay, so I'm sorry, just complete tangent real quick. Sage always makes me laugh because we used to have at Thanksgiving like a dressing that, like, two dressings side by side. One said with sage, one said without sage. And we made it that way for years because the person who didn't like sage had died years before, and we just kept doing it as a tradition. But one year at Thanksgiving, my cousin's husband was going through the line and he just goes, "Do I like sage?" And his wife was like, "Yes, you like sage." So every time I see sage, I'm like, "Do I like sage?"
Like sage?
Anyway.
Do I like sage? Yeah.
Back to you, Jen. Sorry. Sorry for a tangent already. Okay, so who are we talking to today, Jen?
So our guest today is very familiar with teas that help the throat, because he is an audiobook narrator, professional actor, and theater educator, performed in theater, television, voiceover, and film, and he began his journey into audiobooks 4 years ago and has since worked in almost every genre with some of the biggest indie publishers. We're also going to be talking about that he has started out very well in audiobooks with some of the biggest established narrators, authors, and folks that we have talked to on this very show. And so, Grayson Owens, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for that introduction. I always like.
Sorry that I derailed the whole thing, but
no, tangents are good. Tangents are very good. There's nothing like sitting around and drinking tea and having tangents. I like it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Are you drinking tea today?
I am. Just something boring, though. I'm not as sophisticated as you guys, so I think I've got like a Twinings Earl Grey. So, you know.
All right.
Mark me up.
Hey, it'll
it gets you the job done.
It gets the job done.
Yeah, it does. It does.
And sometimes you just need to have those kind of teas, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, there's the ones that you have to be a little delicate with yourself about, and so you pick a delicate tea, and then others, it's just like, it's Tuesday, so here's what we do on a Tuesday, and we have an Earl Grey on the Tuesday. But you got into audiobooks about 4 years ago, and mm-hmm. I have to say, you didn't mess around. I mean, one of your first big titles was Heather Long's Untouchables series, which you did with Marnie Young. And you're starting right off the bat with the heavy hitters. How did that come about? And how did it feel were you even aware of it?
I really wasn't. As you mentioned, I'm a theater educator. And so a student of mine had asked how to get into audiobooks. And I didn't really know much about it, but I went to college with Marnie. And so I knew that she was running a company. And that she was a fabulous narrator on her own. So I reached out to her just really stupidly. And I said, you know, so how do you get into audiobook narration? A student was asking. And she goes, well, I'll send you the one page bullet point thing that I give people. And I said, okay. And she said, have you ever done them before? And I go, no. And she said, well, I haven't heard your voice in like a decade or so, but I remember you having a good voice. Would you like to try it? And so I did what I always do, because I'm a Virgo, and I started researching everything I possibly could. And I took one online class with Paul Liberti, who is a very big voiceover person. And and I learned a lot of really great techniques from him. And then I submitted some samples, with my Blue Yeti microphone and blankets draped over my shoulders. Mm-hmm. Thinking, you know, this might be kind of a fun thing to do. And I did one project with Learning Ally. I don't know if you guys have heard of Learning Ally or not. which is a really great nonprofit organization that does. Mm-hmm. So it gives narrators, new narrators, an opportunity of reading some pretty high level stuff because okay. they are reproducing oh. audiobooks for free for students who have learning disabilities.
Oh, wow.
And it's a fantastic organization. And so I did a really great book with them, was the very first thing I did, called The Lost Compass, which is a really great education because it was a YA novel with uh-huh. like 28 characters. So I got to kind nice. Of play around with character voices. And so I did that. And then all of a sudden Marnie had this audition for me. And the audition was like four different characters because it's a reverse mm-hmm. harem, why choose? And Heather picked me, and when Marnie came back and she goes, okay, it's a 10 book contract and it might be extended to 12. I was like, oh my
God,
like what happens? Okay, so I guess I'm an audiobook narrator now.
Okay,
you are officially one now.
I'm doing this now. I was so incredibly fortunate to be able to read such a fantastic author to start off with. And mm-hmm. that series is just so good because I have to admit, when I went into this, I kind of thought, oh God, it would be great to be like doing horror and thrillers. And, you know, that's kind of what my mind was, not on romance at all. And Heather's book was such a great, Heather's series, the Untouchable series, was such a great series to start with because it's a slow burn. So you really get character development before things really start heating up, which I think allowed me to kind of ease my way into it a little bit.
Right.
Which was really nice. And it was like being on a Broadway show. I mean, I worked on that series with Marnie for a year and a half. So,
you know,
like when it ended, it was kind of a sad thing. I have been very, very fortunate. And it was mainly a hobby for about 4 years until this past mm-hmm. fall when things kind of began to blow up a little bit. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. and blow up they did. I think that you found your niche in a way because you tend to do a lot of series, because after that, your follow-up was the Heart of the Inferno series by Nicole Fanning that you did with Maxine Mitchell, and not as much of a book commitment as the Untouchable series, but still a commitment. And you have spoken about this on social media about your relationship to the character of Jackson Pace. And so tell us a little bit about that if folks haven't heard.
Well, you know, so Jackson Pace, if you haven't listened to the series, and again, Nicole is such a fabulous writer, so I heavily suggest that you listen to it. Or read it. But so Jackson is a mafia don in Chicago. But what makes him so fantastic is the way that Nicole has written a very complex man who goes through a lot of changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have always had a certain amount of insecurity in this particular genre because I don't have that deep gravelly thing that so many guys have. I don't do that naturally. And so, and when I get really excited, I tend to get into a high range of voice. And that's not typically what people are looking for in a mafia don. And so I uh-huh. specifically remember getting the audition and I was trying to do things and I was like, you know what? I'm just not being myself. And I've got to just, mm-hmm. I got to give my version of him and hope that they like it. And I really didn't think that she would. And she loved uh-huh. it. And it was because she was looking for somebody who could give some complexity to Jackson so that there was a softer side to him. And again, because it's a slow burn series. I mean, you know, for the first book, there's not a lot of steam in it. And then it massively picks up by the end. Yeah, he spoke to a lot of the sides of me. He spoke to, you know, the kind of father I would like to be, the kind of husband I would like to be, the protector I would like to be. Mm-hmm. He definitely spoke to when somebody cuts me off in traffic, wanting to curse and yell and throw things. So when he got into his dark side, I really loved playing around with that. It was just a really great series to play around with. And then, you know, even though we didn't work one-on-one with each other after the first book came out and I listened to some samples, like knowing what Maxine was doing, which was so fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the other benefit of the series is that a lot of times you do these, you don't really work with your co-narrator in any way. And then mm-hmm. it comes out and you're like, oh, okay, I see what they're doing. But with this one, like we kind of were able to get to know each other from the previous books coming out. So you kind of are able to continue to develop over the series. So it was such a great experience getting to play around with Jackson. And you know, good or bad, I think people tie me as Jackson Pace more than anything else right now. So,
I mean, all the books that you could be tied to, you know, it's not a bad thing.
Oh, no, no, I'm not regretting it. I am a coattail writer. I love writing coattails. That's what I do.
Yeah. Coattail writer. I like that.
It's a comfortable place to ride.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It is. You get to watch from the back. It's nice.
Yeah.
And now you've had the opportunity to branch out and do things that aren't series. And the standalones you are getting time with lots of other great people, like Rein Me In by Kayla Gross with Desiree Ketchum. I have to tell you that cowboy romances are a hard sell for me.
Darling, why?
That one got me.
Okay.
That one got me. And I love Kayla Gross anyway, but
she's
you
fantastic.
Know,
okay.
You roped her in.
Yeah. Wow.
I gotta be me.
But it's gotta be special to get my attention from, you know, the other types of books I read. And Rein Me In did that. It was more than just, okay, it's a small town, okay, they're cowboys, okay, you know, there was a lot of emotion going on that you kind of didn't expect. What did you think when you got that one? I know that was a lot quicker.
Again, you know, when you're given this gift of character development and backstory and nuance, it is so amazing to get to play around with that. And you know, and again, you know, initially I'm given the audition, and the audition was the very first scene that Gavin is in at the bar, preparing for the first. So he's like flirting with the girls in the bar, and so it felt very cowboy to me. And the only note I was given in advance of the audition was, "We're not looking for Matthew McConaughey." And I was like, "All right, I'm not doing that." And then, when I actually got the book and I was reading through it to prep, I mean, the complexity of the loss that they're experiencing, and then Cade, Gavin's brother, you know, the things that he's dealing with, and the loss of their father. I mean, it was just so much to play around with in there. And it's great because, you know, sometimes you get a lot of questions as a romance narrator about, oh my gosh, what's it like to do the steamy scenes? Like, that must be really hard to do, just sitting there, you know, having a sex scene with yourself. And it can be, but when you have an author that develops the characters the way that authors like Heather and Nicole and Kayla do, it's just another form of human expression. It just becomes, it just becomes you know, just like you express anger or, you know, sadness, you're just expressing lust. And it's, so you have all of this material to kind of push you through the scene so that it's not, you know, I made the comment once in a live that it's not just, you know, Ding Dong the Pizza Guy's here. It's, you know, there's more to it than that.
Well, and there is, because it
passed
seems...
the bow chicken. Wow.
Yeah, the brown chicken, brown cow stuff. Yeah.
And you know, it seems to me that the more difficult ones are the ones that are more emotionally intense, whether that is, you know, emotionally playful or emotionally like this is a catharsis for the characters or whatever it is. If they are, because it's called intimate scenes for a reason, you know, there is an intimacy and a level there. Is that then harder for you to go through that exploration, especially on the title that you're just like getting and it's a one and done sort of thing?
I don't really think it's more difficult. As an actor, I've always connected to things in an empathic way. So even as a reader, I do the same thing. And so, you know, I think I'm more connected into that to begin with. And, you know, what I try to do when I'm narrating is I really try to think about this intimate relationship that I have with the listener. I mean, we are literally inside their head as we're telling the story.
Yeah, incredibly intimate. Yeah,
it is. It's not something like a movie where you're sitting outside of them, or a play where you're on a stage in front of them. You are literally in their ears, and so, you know, that gives you the pathway into telling the story, because you're connecting to that person's emotions too. And in all honesty, I feel it's easier for me to connect to the emotions that I think the listener is listening to than to try to quote unquote turn them on, because you never know what that is for people. I mean, that's an extremely individualized thing.
Exactly.
And so I have to find that the physical intimacy that the characters are dealing with through their emotional life, because I feel like that's the only way to connect to the listener.
How does that inform your prep when you're preparing for a book? Are you focused on that, or are you just trying to like read through and get, you know, make sure that the voices match and that.
You know, when I talk about the progress of the last 4 years of doing this, you know, initially I had the time to sit down and read every single book. That got a little bit harder. I did a C.M. Stunich series, and her books are really long. And so that one got to get really, really hard in being able to prep the entire book, but I still did it. And now my schedule is so tight, I don't have the time to do it anymore.
Right.
So the prep has changed. I don't really get to read the entire book anymore, which I kind of don't love. I wish that I did. So the initial prep right now is really just kind of highlighting the script so that I can separate the characters. I think about I make sure that I know who the characters are. I know what I'm going to do vocally for them. Everything else I just kind of let happen, which has been really great because specifically like with Embers, which was the end of the Heart of the Inferno series, and then Fire and Ash, that really helped me because because I'm somewhat empathic, the emotions just kind of naturally came as I was reading it for the first time because I was experiencing it as a reader for the first time too.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then if it doesn't quite go the way I want it to, then I might, you know, go back and re-record. But a lot of times I'm able to just kind of take the first take because I feel like it's the most natural response to what it is that the book is, since I'm reading it in the moment. I know Angelina Rocca does that too. She and I were talking and she gave me comfort in trusting doing that because I kind of didn't have the trust to do that. And so she gave me the comfort of trusting that a little bit.
Well, and I would think that as a theater educator and that you're telling your students to take the risks, you know, and that it is all, acting is a lot of risk, you know, putting your emotions out there and everything. So what else are you taking from your theater experience and bringing with you into the booth?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I told Marnie this when she first asked me if I wanted to do this. I was like, you know, the audiobooks I've listened to before are kind of monotone and drawn out. I mean, you know, this was like, again, 15 years ago. And I said, that's not what I do. Like, I don't know how to do that. And it wasn't until I've slowly gained the courage to perform the books instead of just reading them. And I even remember there were a couple of like online videos that I watched of people saying, you know, no, don't do less. You're not, let the listener interpret it. You don't need to interpret anything. And I just don't know how to do that. And so I think the courage and the risk, I think, is the big thing. And listening to people, and especially the women, you know, especially, I feel like the women had the courage before the men did to really bring it, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, to listen to people like Maxine and Angelina and the work that they do, it has given me the courage to do the way that I think it is and to just trust the fact that that's going to work. Because sometimes I do. I'm a little afraid that I'm going to overperform it.
Yeah, I think the industry seems to be moving much more towards performance and less towards that kind of monotone reading. I mean, because honestly, that an AI could do their monotone reading.
That's exactly right. That's, we have to change it.
And you have to change it. And you have to change it to something that only humans can do, which is putting in the emotional connection with people.
Yeah,
and that's what people are hungry for. They're not hungry for, you know, a computer to read to them.
Well, and it's one of the things that I've been telling my students, especially with voiceover work. I said, you know, if you want to beat AI, the only way to beat it as a performer is that you always have to surprise your audience.
Yeah.
You always have to be unpredictable. If you're not unpredictable in your specifically with narration, within your delivery, AI can repeat that. Because AI is just regurgitating things that it's been fed. And if you mess around with its algorithm by never staying consistent, it's not going to be able to create anything that's consistent, at least right now. And so, we have to move in that direction or AI will, you know, take the lead.
But I think the audiences are embracing that more and more. And it's certainly within the romance genre. I think that maybe the romance genre seems to be kind of the cutting edge on that, you know, they're sort of driving it, and which makes sense because romance is much more emotionally invested than, say, mystery, you know.
And that emotional investment is going to be the way that we get past the bots. The first title of yours that I listened to, Fire and Ash, and it's a male-male romance, and there is an age gap, and it's also a teacher, a college professor student relationship, and it's a novella, so it's very short, so they really have to get through to the HEA very quickly. And
page two.
By page two, But I was actually not sure that they were going to make it, because the emotional investment that you put into this performance, it was like, oh, these people are flawed and they're human. And it's, and it was a beautiful thing to see, though, even though it was sad and painful and really intimately emotional at times. Did you, and I know that that was another short one, but getting to that point, was there anything that you drew from, or, you know, anything in particular that you drew from to get there?
I'm almost afraid to answer this because it's going to sound a little weird, I think. I drew from my students. I mean, it feels weird saying that because of the nature of what this is and my relationship with my students.
To be clear, I have not
yeah. had a relationship with any of my students.
Yes, yes.
Right.
But we'll make that disclaimer for you.
Right. What I mean by that is that everything that Pax is going through in that book, my students are going through on a constant basis. I mean, you know, his scars are visible, but most of theirs are not. And they have these emotional scars that limit them much in the same way that they limit Pax. And even just with the fact that he's dealing with the repercussions of his sexuality. And so many, I mean, I'm in theater, so many of my students are dealing with their gender identity and their sexuality and everything.
Yeah.
And so, again, to be honest, it just kind of naturally fell out, that book, because of that. Like, I was just thinking of the struggles that my students have in all of their relationships. And, you know, it's kind of interesting for me, because I guess in a way I desexualize the books that I'm narrating. I'm just now realizing that in the moment. It's not about the sex. It's about the connection that the characters are having in the moment. And so, you know, that's why it's not difficult for me to draw that parallel with my students, because I'm kind of desexualizing the nature of the
relationship. Honestly, that's probably what makes it so compelling, is that it's not about, it's not porn, it's emotional intimacy. So
And that's where the drama comes from.
Yeah, and I think it's what a lot of people on the outside of this who don't really give romance a chance first, that they just don't get. That, you know, they're just assuming. And plus, you know, because a lot of the marketing and stuff like that pushes the, you know, the good girl and all those things. I mean, we're pushing those things. But what we're not really pushing. And I think that's changing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's going to be the thing that helps more legitimize what it is that we do. So that it's not just a sex industry thing, you know.
They are, at the end, love stories love in whatever form that comes in. We're getting performance, we're getting emotional performance, and we're hearing the love stories, even though that there is, you know, there's sex in it still, but that's not the focus of it.
Right.
And so we have talked to many narrators on this show, and we've talked about their process, you know, how they got started, their training. I've always been interested in what the rituals are for each of them. Do you have any sort of, now that you are pretty much firmly into the full-time narration world, do you have any daily rituals that are kind of like, this is I can't get my day started
until I do this thing? Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, there's nothing, you know, overly interesting about them necessarily. I have this 15-minute vocal warm-up that I learned at NYU's graduate acting program that I always consistently do before I do any work. And yes, it does warm up my voice, but it's also a little bit of a superstition that I have to do that before I do my work. So there's definitely that. But other than that, God, I wish I could say something interesting here. I don't really have. I really don't have a lot. And I probably would do more of a warm up. But again, for me specifically, sometimes the tired, gravelly voice is a benefit.
Yeah.
You know, going up to the mic. So it's not.
There's a whole market intense for that gravelly voice.
Yeah. I love being sick. as long as I don't sound nasally, it fits.
Right.
So sometimes that's a good benefit to me. But that's pretty much it. I used to be very, very particular, as I said before, about making sure that I read everything all the way through. But I had to give that up for time reasons. Because I wanted to make sure nuance is so important to me in the characterizations. I don't want anything to come off as flat. And so, you know, you get more of that when you're able to read the entire book.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like specifically Nicole Fanning, when I was doing the Heart of the Inferno series, when it got towards the end, I was getting so busy. I was like, especially like Hate to Love You was right before Christmas. And I said, I'm not going to be able to read this entire thing. I need advice from you and learning nuance from some of the things that I might miss. And so, you know, I was able to talk to her in advance about trying
to get some ways it may be better to not have that because you're experiencing the things in the book as the character is experiencing them. So like your character doesn't know what the character doesn't know what's going to happen next. So you're experiencing things, I mean, with the information that you currently have. As long as your notes, you know, the notes are good enough about who you are, then the actual actions, it would make more sense to get that as you go.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, it's I'm a pretty big believer of Meisner work in acting, which is kind of about in the moment. And you prepare, but then once you start, you let go of the preparation.
Right.
And yeah. And so, you know, yeah, I think there's a lot of that in there. I think the thing that always concerns me is that, like, I'm going to get to chapter 5 and then all of a sudden the character reveals some traumatic thing that happened in their childhood. And it's like, oh, that's what that meant in chapter 2 when they're talking about that thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, and sometimes the authors they're not thinking in an acting way of saying, oh, I need to alert you of this if you're going to be reading straight through. So
that's
the only thing sometimes that I fear that I'm going to miss.
Yeah. So authors, make sure that you alert your actors about
your
what they're
narrators.
Your narrators have to know these, you know, plot twists. I mean, you can give them spoilers if nobody else.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's not spoilers if it's performance.
Exactly.
No. You need to know something. You need to know backstory at least. Like the surprises that the reader is going to get in the book is okay for the narrator to have, that happened in Heart of the Inferno too. It's like I had narrated a couple of lines of this dark figure, which turned out to be Michael, the antagonist in the book. But it wasn't until like at the very end of the first book that it said he said in a high pitched voice. And I was oh my God. Okay. So he has this high pitched voice. So then I had to kind of go back and fix some of that. It's always interesting. It's always interesting.
Yeah, because then you have the vocal characteristics of a character and their accents, which you're one of those who do very well. Do you have favorites?
Oh my goodness.
Have a favorite that you haven't done yet that you would like to
I really love playing around in Irish. As a matter of fact, like a lot of times when I'm joking around with my kids, I will do an Irish accent, and my son tricked me by turning my my Siri into an Irish guy. So now when my car talks to me, it's an Irish guy. And
nice.
So I always still joke around with him in the car that when he talks to me in my car, the Irish voice, I will talk back in Irish. I don't know why. I've always loved that accent. I love that accent. I can tell you that when I was at NYU and going through vocal training and we had a dialects class, the two that I had so much trouble with was Australian and South African.
Those are tough.
And they're very close. They're very close to each other. Yeah.
They're similar, but not
particularly South African.
Yeah. And then I had to do a book where the woman was Australian and the guy was South African.
Oh my gosh.
Ooh.
And that was an interesting challenge. And in the end, I was really happy with the way that it turned out. And I always love Russian dialects too. I kind of love the kind of passive aggressive quality of the Russian accent sometimes.
Right.
And I've got a book that I think is coming out today. So actually, I guess I should mention too. So there's Slaying the Frost King by Candace Robinson and Elle Beaumont, and it's my first step into the fantasy genre.
Okay.
And then I also have another Love in Kentbury, which is Claudia Bergoa.
That's
coming
Bergoa.
Up. That actually, I think, was just released yesterday on Valentine's Day. Is it? Well, no, you can't remember.
Valentine's Day was this week.
Yeah.
So it was Valentine's Day was this few months ago, right?
Yeah, a few months ago
on Valentine's Day. Yeah.
So I've had, you know, and a lot of people kind of, one day I had four books all come out at once and everybody was kind of blowing up talking about me. And it's like, yeah, but I recorded those things like months ago. It seems like I'm really, really busy, but it's just like there was just this one day when a lot of the things that I had done had come out.
So those should
be released, I guess, by the time that this is up and running. Mm-hmm. But both of those are two very different things. Again, my first step into fantasy was really fantastic. And I actually got to do Slaying the Frost King with another college friend of mine. Her name's Aria.
Aria Holland?
Aria Holland, yeah. So that was a lot of fun.
Excellent.
This is something else that I love about the audiobook space, because there seems to be these groupings of people who know each other usually from theater or some other, you know, acting realm, and it's like very small world suddenly, and you get to work with these people again. And we have always talked about how the narration community is very supportive of each other, and I think that this is the reason why, is because you've all known each other for, you know, in previous lives, and so getting to work together again is like, oh hey, it's, you know, nice to work together again, even though we're going to each be in our individual boxes and we're not going to be doing, you know, and we're not going to be on a stage this time.
Nice to work with you from a tiny little box.
Yeah.
Yes, from a tiny
virtually,
little box.
Yes. Yeah.
Virtually.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting because you know, I think one of the things that brings us all together, and I feel like sometimes we don't, it's not, this isn't mentioned, but it is a struggle initially to get involved in any kind of acting. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, when you're all kind of, you understand that struggle, we're all there to support each other because we know how mm-hmm. difficult this can be. And so,
right.
you know, celebrating and lifting each other up is huge. And like I said, I've been relying a lot on authors who have taken a risk with me, because I'm not a big name that is definitely going to sell their book yet. And
not a big name yet.
Yet. Okay. I would say that
probably by the time comes out, this is no longer the case.
I'm a prescriber to the fact that I know that everything is temporary. Bad things are temporary, and sometimes good things are temporary. Yeah. So I'm always grateful for the moment that I'm in. And so I'm not being down on myself. I'm just saying that. But I think that's the nature of it. And it's very important to me that it's easier from the position that I'm in to support other new voices, because mm-hmm. I'm still a new voice. It's harder once you get established, especially because so many narrators get tied to authors. Like mm-hmm. that author just reuses them over and over and mm-hmm. over again, which means that author that becomes more established is suddenly closed off to the new voices, unless it's a multicast or something like that.
Right.
And so, you know, so yes, I acknowledge the fact that at some point it's going to be hard for me. I want to do all of Kayla and Nicole's books. But it's important to stay, you know, connected with them. And mm-hmm. and again, sometimes I don't even know who I'm working with until the book comes out. Because again, they don't always tell you who the cast is. I mean, the other day in Alive, somebody asked me who I was really looking forward to working with. And one of the names I mentioned was Alexis Page. And she immediately texted me and she was like, I'm so excited about the book we're doing together. And I was like, I didn't know we were doing a book together. What book are we doing together? And it turns out we're doing like four over the next year. So, you know, I had no idea that was even happening. So you got your wish instantly. I did instantly. Yeah, yeah. See? I've made a bucket list.
You manifested.
So I've made a bucket list of the things that I want to try to accomplish this year. And hers was one of the and a lot of it is still like me learning. Like I'll hear a new narrator mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh, my God, I really want to work with them. So. But like you said, even though it's not, I'm dying for that first opportunity of being in a studio with somebody to really interact with them. And I'm really wishing for the opportunity of being able to do that sometime because, mm-hmm. and Angelina and I have a project that's coming up and we were even talking about maybe doing some ITBs together so that mm-hmm. we're faking it. We're not really necessarily narrating together, but we are. Because I think those opportunities are really great. But mm-hmm. there's just so much talent out there and there's, mm-hmm. there's new talent coming in all the time, and I'm hoping that I will never get an ego to the point where I'm not there supporting, mm-hmm. you know, those new voices. And even the new author voices, too. I mean, I think it's my responsibility. My responsibility is to the author more than anything else. So
I don't see that happening for you. You're very, very supportive in general. And so I don't think that that's likely to happen to you.
I like to believe it's not. You know, I just think it's a trap. It's all, you know, it's so easy to fall into the trap. You know, I often say that, you know, yes, it feels like a lot of people are talking about me, but I'm also aware that I have a very small group of very loyal listeners who are very, very loud. But we're also standing in a very large room with a lot of other really loud small groups. And so, you know, sometimes you have to stay humble by the fact that, yes, people know you and that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Don't let the ego take advantage of that.
Right.
You still have things, you know, you still have a job to do. And And I'm hoping I'm always going to stay that way. It can be a very slippery slope, especially with the fandom that exists in this genre specifically.
Yes. Yeah.
And I have to say, though, that doing small groups, very loud small groups all together in a large room, that is one of the best definitions of social media I have ever heard.
Right?
It is. Well, and this entire thing exists in social
media. Particularly TikTok.
I mean, and that's the interesting thing about this industry is that the public face of it all exists on social media. I mean, you know, you deal with the traditional media with film and television, and sometimes theater, usually not theater, usually it's local media there, but it's social media with this. And again, because of the algorithm, it puts you into a box that can make it feel very, very loud at times. But then you just don't realize that, oh, this thing is actually not this big. It's this big.
Right.
And really understanding where it is that you exist in there, both from a marketing standpoint and a business standpoint. But again, also just to remain humble and stay grounded in realizing that you're still part of a community, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, and speaking of community, the romance community is very fond of their book events. Are we going to be seeing you at one, maybe?
Well, I this all happened relatively quick for me. So by the time I thought, oh, maybe me sitting at a table will not feel like high school dodgeball.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
There were several times because I was like, I don't want to be the person sitting at the table and everybody goes up and they're like, and what do you do? Didn't want to be that person. So by the time, like, it got to the point where people were actually starting to ask for me, there's been a couple of people that asked me to come. So I was late. Like, I really wish I was doing Denver, which I can't do anyways. I think they were going to give me an exception, but I can't do them because I'm actually directing a show that opens that weekend.
Gotcha.
So the first one is
going to be very crowded.
It's going to be very crowded, which was one of the kind of reasons why I wanted to go, because I wanted that kind of like I have to kind of be forced to socially network. I'm very much the kind of person that belongs in a booth by itself sometimes.
Right. So also feel that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So the only thing I'm actually signed on for right now is I'm going to be doing Dark Star. So I'll be doing Dark Star Con in August.
All right. Well, I will see you there.
Oh, you're going to be there. Excellent.
Yep.
Excellent. Great, great, great.
It worked for me. It didn't work out for Jen, but, you know, we're not doing them all together this year.
Yeah, and considering how many we did last year, we're being very selective this year.
I think that's just it. Like, as I began to look at all of the options, I was like, number one, they're all within a week of each other. So it's like from August to end of November, they're all very, very tight in there, which is very hard for me as a college professor to get away.
Right.
And so, you know, since I've got this other job thing going on, Dark Star, I chose because, again, somebody had reached out to me. And to be honest with you, Troy, I've always had this kind of like peripheral relationship with Troy because of Marnie. And I very much view him as a mentor. I love the way that he runs himself socially and professionally. And I'm really eager to meet Troy, to be honest with you, face to face. So I really wanted to do that. Plus, the other benefit is that Nicole and Kayla are both going there. So since they kind of helped me be where I am right now, it was kind of nice to get the same social event with them. And then I'm taking a sabbatical from work next spring. So I'm hoping that there will be some more cons then. I'm thinking about doing.
I'm sure
there will be. Yeah. So I'm going to have more of a social presence, hopefully, within the next year. So come play dodgeball with me.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Well, and yeah. Yes, and it is not, but it is not a requirement. Xana will definitely be seeing you at Dark Star.
And I look forward to that, yeah.
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 That's awesome.
And we are so pleased that you could join us and that we could talk to you and get to know you better. And before you really, 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 really take off, and even though I would say that you are now, but, you know.
During takeoff.
Well, I appreciate that. I
mean, mid-flight.
As I've been listening
to your... Seatbelts are fastened.
When you invited me on and I went back and I looked at your roster of previous interviews, I was like, do they know who I am? Like, I'm very moved that you found value in me being here. And it's so great talking to you. Seriously. Yeah. I thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Grayson. Yeah. It has been wonderful talking to you. And all of the information about Grayson, including links to his socials, will be on the show notes page of our website, cupandsaucybooks.com.
You can also follow us on social media at Cup and Saucy Books. We are on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what you hear, review and subscribe to the show on your favorite pod platform.
Thank you for joining us for the Cup and Saucy Book Club. Join us next time for more great conversations from the world of books.
And probably a few tangents.
Happy reading.
Cheers.